Shalom. That's good. That's a typical greeting we give where I come from, ancient Israel. It means peace to you. I knew a lot of peace in my life, and I also knew a lot of warfare and a lot of hardship. Perhaps you've heard of me. My name's Gideon. My story's told in the book of Judges, chapter 6 through 8. And when I was living in the land of Israel, it was a great season of peace. Deborah and Barak had been used by God to wipe out and kill King Jabin of the Canaanites. And in our land was this amazing season of prosperity. Like kids would just run down the dirt roads just laughing and playing together. The farming, I tell you, man, like, I'm a farmer, and the crops were so good. The fruits were just sweet and rich with flavor. And the vegetables, amazing. You just eat them right off the vines. A great, great season. And I'm not really sure like how it began, but little by little, as I watched my parents and the other adults around me, I started noticing that people didn't talk about the Lord much anymore. My own father, even, he built an altar to Baal and a pole to Asherah. And they started worshiping these false gods. And it didn't take long after that that the Midianites and the Amalekites, they started coming into our land and invading it. So where we were, we had these rich, fertile valleys. And then off to the east, we had the Jordan River, and then beyond that, these hills. And as the Midianites and the Amalekites would come down the hills, it looked like water flowing. They filled every crack, and they filled every space. And they would cross that river, and they would march into our land, and they would crush the stalks of our fruits and vegetables. They'd tear everything up. They had these camels and their livestock, and they dragged them along with them, and their hooves would stomp our fertile ground that we had spent so much time making into these beautiful straight rows so that we could grow our food. And then they would set their tents right on top of everything, destroying it all. And what they didn't destroy, they would eat. And they did this for 7 years, every year at the harvest. I mean, look, we were so afraid of this. Like, we weren't warriors. We weren't strong. We couldn't stand up against them. So every time we would try to do anything, I mean, it didn't take much. I mean, just even a little bit of aggression back toward us. Man, we hoofed it up to the mountains and the hills on the sides. And we'd find these caves, and we'd actually live in these caves. We abandoned our own territory and land and let these invaders take it over because we're so afraid of our lives. Can you imagine that? And then every year when they'd leave, we'd go back into our decimated and broken land. And we were starving. And we were frail. And I'm not sure how it began, but little by little, I started hearing people talking more and more about praying to the Lord. I'm not sure maybe you ever know like exactly how those things begin. But it started to become very obvious that we were so weak and we were so broken that there was no solution to our dilemma except the Lord do something amazing. He was like our only hope. And I started hearing like the people around me talking about this. And I started seeing people gathering together to pray and to call out to the Lord. You might be wondering, like, well, what was I doing? What were you doing during all this time, Gideon? I was keeping my head down low is what I was doing. Staying out of trouble. And I didn't want anything to do with those Amalekites and Midianites. So, you know, I'd get the wheat that was left. I mean, they'd leave some scraps, so we'd grab these scraps, and I'd go and I'd try to harvest them as I could in a wine press. Like, that's a ridiculous project, by the way. I mean, typically what you do with wheat is you take some, you get up on a hill so there's some good wind, you throw it up in the air. And then the wind is going to blow away the light stuff, which is like the chaff. It's kind of like a feather, and it just blows away. And the heavier stuff, the wheat, it drops straight back down, and then you've got the good stuff. You keep doing that over and over, and then you've got the good stuff, the wheat, you take it, and you go. Like, how does that work inside a wine press? I'll tell you how it works. It doesn't work. There's no wind. But I was preferring to do something idiotic than to do something out in the open that was brave. And I kind of wondered, like, where was this amazing God that had done so much for our people through history, that had rescued us from Egypt, that had rescued us from King Jabin and the Canaanites? Like, where was he now? Because I saw no evidence of it anywhere. And so you can imagine how surprised I was when I'm walking through my town one day, and there's this man sitting under a tree, and he calls out to me. He said, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." I started looking around, and I'm like, who's the mighty warrior here? And I found out that that was the angel of the Lord. And the angel said to me that in my strength, I would deliver Israel from the hands of the Midianites. And it was because the Lord was with me. Like, that was kind of out of the blue. So I asked him for a sign. That seemed like a pretty normal thing. So I said, look, I need to get a little sign from this. So I cooked him a little meal. I brought it out to him. And he had this staff with him. And he took the staff and he touched the food. And out of the end of the staff came this fire, and it consumed the food that I had made him. It's like a burnt offering. And like, I knew enough about my history and the Lord to know, okay, that's what the Lord does. Like, that's God. And I was afraid. I was like, oh my, I'm about to get wiped out. I've seen the angel of the Lord here, and he's just given me this amazing sign, and he's calling me to do something that's like way bigger than myself. But before I could get onto that, he had a task for me that dealt with my own family. I had to start with my family and my family's house. He told me, he's like, look, you need to go tear down that altar to Baal and that pole to Asherah that your father has built. Whew. I didn't want to do that. Everybody in the whole town, they went and worshipped at that. I mean, tear it down. And then he said, not only tear it down, but take one of your dad's bulls, the one that's 7 years old. He said, kill it and put it on the broken pieces of the altar and the Asherah pole and burn it as an offering to the Lord. I'm thinking, man, everybody's going to see that. Right? The stuff's going to be broken, and now there's a big fire. And an animal is dead. So I got together 10 of my servants, and I said, here, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go at night. Nobody's going to know it's us. We sneak over there. That's a big project, man. Took 11 of us to do it. We tore all that stuff. We broke it. We're trying to be quiet. You know, we take that big calf. We kill it. We put it on there. Burn it. And it's an offering to the Lord. And man, when everybody wakes up in the morning, like, the village was like a beehive, man. They can see all the smoldering smoke coming off of that thing. And everything's broken. Man, they were like on the manhunt. Who did this to our altar to Baal? Eventually, it wasn't hard. They found me. And they were ready to kill me. Surprisingly, it was actually the intervention of my own father that stopped it all and saved my life. Here's what my dad said. He's like, look, if Baal is real, then let's just let Baal deal with Gideon. You don't need to do it. And so they said, okay, that's fine. Let's let Baal do it. And they let me go. You know, that's really stuck with me. Because Baal never came to get me. I mean, when your life is like so close to the end, like everything kind of slows down and you're very acutely aware of all the details that are happening. And I remember my father standing up and saying that. And it just makes me think as I think about life. Like, people spend so much time scurrying around, like worshiping these invisible deities. And one will say, well, this one's real. And another one says, well, this one's real. And, like, how do you really know if they're real? You know they're real when you see them work and move in the physical realm. When they change things and when they do things, you know that they're real and you know their character. And I knew Baal wasn't real because he never did anything. But I tell you what, the Lord was real because he did something unbelievable. Now look, I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm going to get to that in a second. Let me tell you what's happening, right? Like, right after this big fiasco with my family and my little village, it's harvest time again. So guess what that means? Here come the Midianites and the Amalekites again, right? They're moving through our land like a swarm of locusts. Same deal again. But this time, like, I'm watching this thing with, like, new perspective. I'm wondering, I'm thinking, okay, Lord, how are you going to use me to rescue my people from these invaders? Are you going to use me to, like, lead a military campaign? Now, that didn't make a lot of sense. I didn't know anything about military. I'm a farmer. And I thought, well, treaties. Maybe, like, sometimes people do treaties. Maybe you're going to do a treaty. We didn't have anything to offer them in a treaty. There was no value in them making a treaty with us because we had nothing to give except all the stuff we had, which they'd already taken. And that's when it happened. Like, the Spirit of the Lord came upon me. Now, that's something I'd never experienced before. It's like, all of a sudden, like, I knew, like, he was giving me these thoughts and these ideas. I sensed his spirit, like, inside of me. Like, I could feel him in my soul. Something was going on inside of me that had never happened before. And so I called all of the men from the surrounding tribes, Manasseh and Asher, Zebulun. And I got them all together. And I'm like, guys, we're going to do something amazing. But I got to tell you, man, I was still, like, I was kind of in this weird place of, like, feeling and sensing like the Lord wanted me to do something and lead and rescue. But at the same time, like, so afraid. Because now it was all these people that were looking to me for leadership. All of these people that were looking for me, like, in a risky way, like, what if I was wrong? And so I asked the Lord for a sign. I was like, look, Lord, I'm willing to be faithful. I'm willing to step out into this unknown. But I really need to know, is this you who's leading me? So I asked him, I said, look, you see this fleece? I said, make it wet through the night and make all the ground around it dry. And if that happens, man, I'll know that you are leading me and you're speaking to me. I woke up in the morning, sure enough, fleece was wet, ground was dry. I was pretty impressed by that. That was good. I said, all right, Lord, look, forgive me for asking for one more, but I really need to know. Like, I need to know for sure that this is you. So let's do this one more time, but let's reverse it. Tonight, make the fleece dry and the ground around it wet. Because if I know that you do that, I'll know for sure you're leading, and I will go where you are leading me to go. I will do the unthinkable. I will go against and lead your people against the Midianites. So I woke up the next morning, and he did it. The fleece was dry, and the ground was wet. And I had a moment right then. I mean, it was a combination of, like, seeing his faithfulness. It was a combination of seeing him work, and it was a combination of, like, having the Spirit of the Lord on me, and I was resolved. At that moment, I would not back down. I would not change course. Regardless of how afraid I was going to move ahead and follow the Lord. And it was good that I had gotten myself resolved to do that, because then the Lord said something to me. He's like, look, you got too many men. Which I thought was an interesting thing, because, you know, the Midianites and the Amalekites, they had 140,000 of them, and we had 32,000. Too many men. We don't even have enough men. And he's like, look, here's what I want you to do. Go to them, and you say, look, if anybody is terrified about going against the Midianites and the Amalekites, you can go home. So that's what I did. I told everybody, look, if you're petrified, you can leave. I thought, this isn't a good plan, God, but look, I'd already resolved, I'm going to follow him regardless. 22,000 of our men left. It left us 10,000. I'm like, all right, I'm resolved, I'm moving ahead. Lord, whatever you say, I'm going to do, regardless of the circumstances, whatever, regardless of what it looks like. And then the Lord said, okay, you still have too many men. Too many men? I only got 10,000. He's like, here, trust me. Take them down to the river. And I'm going to show you, based on how they drink, which ones you take. Now, look, let me tell you something. This river, this is... The river was the only boundary between us and the Midianites. So like when we went down the hill and went right up to the edge of the river, and these reeds are all like sticking up in the river, and it was a bit camouflaged, right across the river was the camp of the Midianites. We could see them, and they could see us. And we moved down, 10,000 of us, along that river. And the Lord said, look, some are going to drink and they're going to get down and they're going to like suck it up. And then another group of people, they're going to get down on their knee and they're going to grab it with their hand and they're going to lap it like a dog. You take those men. Only 300 drank that way. 300 of us is all that was left. And the Lord said, that's all you need. You only need 300 because you're not fighting this battle, Gideon. The Lord was saying, I'm going to fight this battle for you. Now look, I was pretty afraid at this point. I'm like, Lord, this doesn't make a lot of sense. So he said, look, here's what I'm going to do for you. It's at night. And I want you to sneak down into the Midianite camp. I'm like, that doesn't seem like a good idea. You sneak down into the Midianite camp. And you listen to what the men are talking about. So I did. I snuck down there with my best friend. And we're standing outside this tent. And we're overhearing these guys talk. And the Lord had been going ahead of us. This whole time, I'm over here asking for fleeces to be wet and dry and reducing our army. The Lord was working the whole time. And he's given the Midianites and the Amalekites dreams at night. And these dreams were scaring them to death. And I overheard them saying, I had this dream. And this big bale of hay was rolling down the hill and it was lit on fire. And it crushed into our camp and it destroyed everything and it started burning up. And you know who that bale of hay was? This is them. They're talking. You know who that bale was? It was the Lord, and it was Gideon. And then the other guy's like, man, we're going to get destroyed. And I looked at my buddy, and I'm like, let's go. Man, we ran back to our camp, and I'm like, get my 300 men. I'm like, this is it, man, we're going. And I get my 300, and I say, here's the plan. Everybody, get a ram's horn. Everybody, get a clay pot and a torch. We're going. And so we broke up into three different groups, 100 people each group. We got on different sides of their camp. And I said, look, you guys wait for me. And as soon as I blow my horn, you guys blow your horn. And as soon as we blow our horns, you take your clay pot and you throw it down on the ground. And it's going to smash. And I don't know why we're doing that, but the Lord said to do it. It's going to freak them out. And then we're going to hold our torches up with our left hands and we're going to keep blowing our horns with our right hands. And that's what we did. Surrounding this camp, standing right where we were. A horn and a torch. And as we did that, and we're yelling out for the Lord and for Gideon, and we're shouting it, and it's this chaos that's kind of ensuing everywhere around us, but we're just standing our ground. And the Midianites, they were so afraid. It's the middle of the night. It's dark. They're taken by surprise. They start running everywhere. They're like killing each other. And we're just standing still. And the Lord is conquering our enemy. Their wills had been broken. They knew that they were up against a force that they couldn't defeat. And man, they're scurrying. They're running for their lives at this point. And so we called in some of the other tribes. We said, man, help us mop up the mess. So we called Asher and Ephraim and the rest of Manasseh. And we said, man, help us get after these guys. And we start chasing them. And they're fleeing. And we're killing them. In the end, 120,000 of them were dead. The Lord had annihilated our enemy that had been mistreating us and abusing us and taking advantage of us in our own land. And when this whole thing was over, we're in another place spiritually. Our confidence in what God could and would do on behalf of his people was just off the chart. And it reminded me as I was thinking about this victory, which clearly made no sense, humanly speaking. And I thought, you know what? This is why the Lord said, when he wanted to reduce our numbers, this is why the Lord said reduce them. Because if we'd had an army that was reasonably strong, and there was a human explanation for why this would have happened, the Lord said, you're going to take credit for that victory. And I don't want you taking any credit for that victory. I want this to be so ridiculously obvious that some supernatural God, the God of the universe, was working and doing this on your behalf, that the only outcome for you and all of Israel is to worship him and to love him and to get rid of all the altars to Baal and all the Asherah's poles, to stop defiling ourselves by intermarrying with the people and to live faithfully to him. And man, in that moment, as the wake of that victory was there, and we're just like standing triumphant, I felt and I experienced that reaction. No one could have done that except the Lord. That's one of the reasons why I said no when they asked to make me king. Like, Gideon, you're really good at this leadership thing, man. You be our king. I'm like, oh no. I knew enough about our history to know that God didn't want us to have a king. The Lord himself, he wanted to be our king. He wanted to lead us. And so I said no to that. But I did do some things that I think kind of reveal that in the wake of my victory, I made some compromises and did some things that I shouldn't have done and I'm not proud of. And I think it reveals something here. You know, the Lord can use and will use people that are kind of small and insignificant. Look, I was from the tribe of Manasseh. The Manasseh was not a strong, good tribe. And I was from like the lowest, weakest family in our own tribe. And God, like, not only did he say, look, you guys are going to win this with 300 people. God also said, I'm going to use a nobody like Gideon. And I think that that reveals something about what God does. He uses small, weak, frail people to accomplish his great, big miracles. And when we start to think we're really good, and when we start to think, hey, man, I've got it all together, start to think, man, I've got some power, I've got some influence, start to do things our own way, man, we start to mess it up. And I tell you, I built this Asherah from the spoils of our war. I put it in our hometown. I thought it was a good idea. And all my people, they worshiped that thing. I shouldn't have done that. But I thought that was a good idea. I wasn't following the Lord's plan. I had a bunch of wives and a concubine. I had a lot of kids too, 70 sons. And you know one of those sons? Ephraim. When I died, he tried to become king. He was trying to do things in his own way. He got a little bit too big for himself. And I think I modeled that for him toward the end of my life. I had an amazing time of faithfulness. And man, I trusted the Lord in a way that honestly, like I look back at it and I think, whew, only because the Lord was on me. Only because I had seen the Lord work in powerful ways. And I am so excited. I love telling the story of how God like worked through me and through my nation. And I'm so grateful that I was providentially small and weak. Because that's when God does big, big things through His people who will be faithful to Him. And I don't know how that applies to all of you guys here today. You probably don't have warriors like the Midianites and the Amalekites invading your land. But I hope that this message has some relevance to you for the obstacles you're facing and the way you try to solve them. In your own strength or in the Lord's mighty strength and mighty power.